Welcome to 3GT, the podcast where three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner, discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of 3GT, although today we're going to be 3GT minus one. This is Barry York, and I have with me today Scott Hunt, but our other friend and host, Kyle Borg, is not with us. Scott, do you have an idea where he is?
My understanding is he might be on a cruise somewhere. I don't know where it is. Or as I like to call it, the Sodom and Gomorrah of the seas, cruise ships.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do an episode on today. It'll be why Christians should not go on cruise ships.
I'm just joking, by the way.
Yes, well.
About Sodom and Gomorrah on the seas.
Yes, yeah. Well.
Kind of.
Kind of, yes. I'm sure if Kyle is on a cruise somewhere that it's he's behaving himself. But right. It is fun to... It is good to have a little fun that his experience. Have you ever been on a cruise?
I have never been on a cruise. I'd like to go. What I'd like to do is take an ocean liner and cross the ocean, go to Ireland or England from the United States, kind of the reverse of the Titanic. But yes. I don't see that happening anytime soon with children as young as mine are.
Yes. And I'm assuming when you say I, you meant you and Allison going.
Sure. Well, yeah, the two shall be one, right?
That's right. So. That's right. Well, I've never been on a cruise. And to be honest, I don't really have a lot of desire to do so, but we'll see. Maybe someday. Well, our real topic for this episode of 3GT minus one is, I guess we'll probably title this Living in Arminianville. Living in Arminianville. Because as Scott and I were thinking about what to talk about in Kyle's absence, I was just reflecting, Scott, on how you and I have spent quite a bit of time together over the years in ministry before I came out here to Pennsylvania. We were together as elders on the same session in Kokomo, Indiana, and then, of course, you live over in Marion, and we saw the development of the work over there, and both of those communities... Yeah. Have a very heavy influence of Arminian theology.
Right.
There's a huge amount of Baptists and Pentecostal and particularly Wesleyan influence, especially where you live, correct?
Yeah, Marion is, I would almost call it the Wesleyan capital of the world. We have Indiana Wesleyan University, but for a long time, it was the world headquarters for the Wesleyan Church that eventually got moved down to Indianapolis. But there is a remnant and a large remnant of Wesleyans in this community. So it is probably the most Wesleyan community you'll find short of maybe Grand Rapids, or which is odd. There's a yes. big Wesleyan contingent up there. But this community in this area is very much influenced by the Wesleyan theology.
Yes. And so Marion is in many ways a mecca for Wesleyan theology. And as we talk about this subject, I know our desire here isn't to necessarily just go bashing other Christians, but rather to make distinctions and think through what it means as a Reformed person to live with the knowledge of the grace of God, but also with a desire to exercise a graciousness. And but it does present its challenges to us. And I thought just before we really dug into what it means to live in a community such as that we probably should define our terms. And Scott, when we talk about what it means to be Arminian, for instance, what's some of the first things that come to your mind?
The first thing that comes to my mind is you have the right to choose, that human choice is paramount in God's creation. It's kind of the flavor I have gotten, but it's the idea that all men are able to choose. All men have the ability to choose whether or not to be saved. They don't deny the fall. And Arminians will tell you they believe in total depravity. but they have to come up with some way to make people able to choose. So they come up with things like prevenient grace, which is the idea that God gives just enough grace to every man to be able to choose what is right. So I think when it boils down to it's a pro-choice, I guess, pro-choice theology.
Yes.
Do you like that? Hopefully that wasn't too offensive.
Yeah, as long as we're not first talking about with respect to abortion, but with respect to conversion. And obviously we derive that term from a name, Jacobus Arminius, who was a theologian in the Netherlands toward the end of the 1500s, early 1600s. And he was a Reformed theologian to begin with, but as he began to study more of the teachings of John Calvin, he began to be less and less persuaded about them. And the theology that bears his name probably became most widely known after his death, because he died in 1609, and it was a year later that those who had taken up the articles, the teachings of Arminius, formalized them in what they called the Five Articles of Remonstrance. And those teachings became highly controversial in the Netherlands. And the church responded. They called a synod. That synod met in 1618 and 1619. So really at the 400th anniversary of that synod. And annually, our seminary has a conference on called the Westminster Conference in the fall, and we're actually going to be treating the synod at that conference. So it's on our minds at the seminary, and others are writing about this since it's been 400 years later. But the doctrines of salvation, the doctrines of grace, were clearly formulated there at the Synod of Dort in response to the articles of remonstrance, a word that really means a protest. They were protesting the doctrines of Calvinism. And I thought I would just, we don't want to get too deep into this particular part, at least not on this podcast, because we want to come back to more of a practical living in the midst of Arminian theology. But I did think it might be helpful just to hear a little bit of the flavor of this, because in one sense, you have to tune your ear to what they're getting at. Let me just read the first article that was condemned by the Synod of Dort, Article 1. It says that God, by an eternal and unchangeable purpose in Jesus Christ, his Son, before the foundation of the world, hath determined out of the fallen, sinful race of men to save in Christ, for Christ's sake, and through Christ, those who, through the grace of the Holy Ghost, so we're rolling along real well here, but then it goes on to say, those who shall believe on his Son, Jesus. And as you not only hear that statement, but then read more of the explanation of what is meant by that, what we find is that God's eternal purpose, those that he has chosen, are those who believe. And what is meant by that is, in a sense, God is looking through history with his foreknowledge, and he sees who will believe, and in response to that, really then calls those his elect, the ones that he's chosen out of this world. So it's based not on God's decree, and God's having decided before all time who his elect shall be. But it's really based, as you indicated, Scott, on the choice of man.
Right.
And do you hear that around you?
That God's... Well, first of all, what I have come to find is that people are not very theologically astute. Mm-hmm. They don't even want to deal with the foreknowledge issue. But that being said, oftentimes that is the conclusion that has come to when Arminians wrestle with this and kind of give it some thought. They will say, well, God foreknew. He knew what I would choose. And that's what all this means. It's not that God made me choose. It's not that God chose me. It's that God knew the choice I would make. And based on that. So yeah, that's a very usual response when this topic is brought up from those around me, those I've dealt with, and even me at times in my youth.
Yes. As you grew up Wesleyan, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. I did. So I know a lot of their arguments and their thoughts.
Right. And of course, when we talk about that word, God for new or God's for knowledge, it is a biblical word. It's found in Romans 8. And of course, our understanding and really the meaning of the word isn't so much this idea of someone knowing what someone would do beforehand, but really it's a very intimate word. When we talk about God foreknowing us, it really means that he knew us, that he there in the mind of God, even before we were created, we were conceptual. He knew who we were. He loved us. And because he loved us then when he created us, he had already decided that he would save and redeem us, not based on what we would do, but based on his perfect and holy will. So that would be really one of the great divides between Arminian theology and Calvinistic theology. I think another place where this comes up is because then of their view of the will of man, even though again they would use the term total depravity, they still allow that man's, he has the ability, he has the will to be able to make the choice in believing in the gospel and receiving Christ or not. And we would say the doctrine of total depravity is contrary to that, that man is dead in his sin and unable to choose. And the only way that he can choose is if God, through his mercy and grace, regenerates his heart by his Holy Spirit and enables the man to choose. So that would be another important distinction to make.
Yeah, Arminians do not like this idea that man cannot choose. And that's why I called it a pro-choice. It's this idea that it's really, when you boil it down, it is a man-centered gospel. Mm-hmm. One that makes man's will to be sovereign over God's, man's choice sovereign over God's choice, man's... It ultimately strips God of the glory that he is due. And I don't want to get ahead of myself, and I don't want to seem like I'm just being unreasonable, unloving, uncharitable. But when it boils down to it, that's what the Arminian theology is. Mm-hmm. And I think we addressed a lot of those things several episodes ago when we talked about Reformed theology, what it is, that it's, you know, it's a God-centered, gracious theology.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason why I like having on the shows. You always remember our previous episodes. I tend to not remember them very well. Well, let's get to how this works out in our ministry and living around in a culture, really. I mean, it's not just our communities, but again, I think the predominant theology in the land is still this. And when we speak of Christian theology, is Arminianism. And it does lead to interesting interactions. I recall, maybe I've mentioned this on a previous episode again, I don't remember. But I still remember being at your wedding, which you were married back in your home congregation, though you had me participate in the wedding, and your minister was there and very graciously allowed me to be there. And I think when I started in, I said something about...
Nervous. Yeah. Are you nervous?
Being a Reformed pastor in this setting, and your pastor very humorously said, "You think you're nervous?" So, but it does lead to interesting things. I recall Scott tragically when I was in Kokomo, the two high school students were killed. Mm-hmm. In an accident right after school, a car accident. And one of my friends who was, I won't necessarily name the denomination, but he was a Arminian person, invited me to come. He had gotten permission on a parking lot that was across the street from the high school grounds, so he could do this, to have a memorial service for these students just outside. And I remember standing out there, and he very, in many ways, very clearly laid out the tenets of the gospel, of what Jesus had done for people. But then he got to calling the students to believe on Christ. And he didn't stop. He kept going. And I really began to feel like it was, I was at an auction at one point, because you know, who is going to believe in Jesus today? Who's going to believe? I know that someone's going to believe in Jesus today. And yeah, he just kept going on and on, wanting to see somebody's hands raised. And I'm not making this up. I was standing more toward the back than the front. And in front of me, two students looked at each other, shrugged their shoulders like, let's get this over with, and both raised their hands and sold, you know. They had bought into what was being offered. And
well, we joke. You're familiar with the Psalter, the Book of Psalms for worship that most congregations are using in the RP Church. But I was joking because one of the tunes is from the hymn "Just as I Am."
Yes.
And I was talking with another member of our congregation, and that, to be honest, that tune just kind of makes my stomach just ball up into knots. I heard it over and over and over again as pastors in my childhood would plead and urge with people to come to the altar, come to the altar. We'll sing it one more time. We come to the altar. And so it is, it's this, it's like they're judged based on the results of their preaching. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're thinking that it's up to you, it's mm-hmm. up to your power, your persuasion to convince, then you really fall into Finneyism, where you're using the methods of Charles Finney to, you end up manipulating in a fleshly way. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not their, so many of them, that's not necessarily their heart in doing so, but really what they're doing is trying to use means that, besides just the preaching of the word and prayer and reliance on the mm-hmm. Spirit, human means to produce conversions. And so that's why there is the altar and the altar call and the music and the pleading, and it's also why you get, I think, confused folk, because I can't tell you how many people I remember saying that they had gone repeatedly to the altar, and when was I saved, and really what does it mean to be saved? And it really begins to cast a lot of a doubt and confusion into people's minds.
Yeah, I think we actually covered part of that topic in a previous episode as well, when we talked about marketing, you know, church marketing. But yeah, that's what Arminianism becomes, as a marketing ploy, because they, and it's a real heavy burden to bear when it's your words and your actions that can mean the determination of life or eternal death for a person. I mean, that's a heavy burden to bear. And so you will manipulate, you will do whatever you can. So I think it's good for us to appreciate some of the weight that their theology puts them under and try to ease their conscience, as it were, with Calvinism, with Reformed theology.
Right. Well, I remember falling under that as a young believer, and I purposely, in my senior year of college, after being a Christian for a year or two, moved back to be evangelistic and try to reach others for Christ. And I almost had a nervous breakdown in the first semester, so worried about these guys that I was trying to reach out and they weren't responding to what I was doing. And I still remember going home over the break, the Christmas break, and it was really just reading the scriptures. And I don't remember the particular verses at that time, but I began to realize, you know, this isn't up to me. And I think the seeds of Reformed theology were beginning to be planted just through God's word, although it would take another couple of years before they came more full-fledged. Well, Scott, as people live in Arminianville, some of our listeners, what would be some of the things that, as we have other congregations around us that are committed to Arminian theology, what would be some ways? Do we have to just completely separate them? I mean, we we look back in church history, and of course, the Synod of Dort did pronounce that these were heresies. So very strong stance taken. And we do believe that the doctrines of Calvinism, the total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, perseverance of the saints, those are non-negotiables.
Right. Yes, they are. They are non-negotiable. I like, in my life, my personal practice, I like to do what I try to deal with people like Jesus did. Mm-hmm. The teachers of his day, he was very straightforward, called them, you know, a synagogue of Satan, even, you know, vipers, brood of vipers. So there, I try to distinguish between the teachers and those who have been led astray by it, by the teaching. I also remember, I try to remember when I'm speaking with somebody that it's not my wisdom, it's not my intelligence, it is not my choice that led me to these convictions. It was the grace of God. Mm-hmm. So you have to be gracious when you're dealing with some of these people. And, you know, we are all this side of the judgment seat of Christ, this side of eternity, we are all inconsistent. Yes. And at the root of it, most Arminians are very inconsistent, because if you listen to their prayers, they pray like Calvinists. Mm-hmm. If you listen to them talk about things in their life, they talk like Calvinists, and yet they just can't seem to give up this idea of choice, that somehow my choice makes the difference. Mm-hmm. So in dealing with them, I try to separate it into the two groups. And then you just have to be patient. You just have to live your life in the truth, in my opinion, in the truth of the gospel, and demonstrate to them why you believe what you believe, and show them that it does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, and agreeing with what you're saying, that not only are they confused about their theology, but often they're confused about our theology. So
right.
When I hear so often an Arminian describe what he thinks I mean by being a Calvinist, when he gets done, I said, that's not what I believe, because you just described hyper-Calvinism.
Right.
You didn't describe true biblical Calvinism.
Right.
So they, it sounds like we, in their mind, that we're turning man into a robot. And as much as we uphold the sovereignty of God and salvation, we still don't believe that the way that God works, that, for instance, that he violates will. We believe that he changes will to desire what he wants. And that's different. So there is, as you look at someone responding to the gospel, we say it is God's ultimate doing. He is the primary source of their motion toward Christ, but they're still doing the walking. They're still doing the receiving and the responding, and they do have to respond to the gospel. I still recall there were times where we had some Calvinistic guys come into our congregation, and pretty soon they would start accusing me or others of being Arminian simply because we were calling people to believe in the gospel and respond to the gospel, not like an auctioneer, hopefully with a more biblical pleading. What would be some other ways in your mind that we probably ways that we wouldn't be able to cooperate with Arminian brothers or sisters in certain ministries, just because it would cause us to compromise our convictions, compromise our theology, even though it might be difficult to take a stand such as that?
I think sometimes prayer services, I think there are times based upon the topic, who's leading those prayers. I mean, public times of prayer, I think, are important, valuable to show up, but we have to be careful who we're joining in with. The problem is it goes so much deeper. Arminianism is more than just salvation. So, you know, if we, you have these public, I recall, you know, public times of worship, you know, well, I can't really participate like you want me to, because I don't think that's right. You know, and it's hard to say. It really depends upon the situation, and I hate to say that, but it's so fact sensitive, as attorneys like to say, that to say black and white, you can or you can't. It requires wisdom and discernment, and so I'm not going to tell you can do this and you can't do that. I mean, you have to judge and weigh in the balance each one.
Right. Yeah, there were some places and times where I was praying with, you know, my Baptist brothers and felt very at home and comfortable there. But there were some other services that were put together in such a way that as I looked and reviewed that, I realized in good conscience, I couldn't because of what they were communicating and mm-hmm. saying. The same thing with some of the evangelistic efforts that sometimes churches will have community outreach efforts. And if they are based on some of these approaches of Finneyism, then I found I just couldn't participate that way. If they weren't, a lot of times they were, even though there would be churches involved, sometimes they were almost like apart from the church or separated from the church, almost like the church was getting in the way of doing evangelism. And certainly churches can, but the Lord wants us to not just evangelize, but make disciples, and people need to identify evangelistic efforts and messages and messengers with the church. And if that's not happening, I think that's a true danger. Living in Marion as you do, and again, I'm not trying to get you in trouble. It's very interesting, you know, our denomination has what we call an international conference every 4 years. And here are the Reformed Presbyterians coming to Marion every 4 years because the IWU, Indiana Wesleyan University, has beautiful facilities. They have a wonderful staff. It's just been nothing but a good experience for us to be there. There's a lot of good fellowship that takes place, not only within our own, but with the staff and the community there. So we do recognize that there's some sincere brothers in these other camps. It reminds me of the anecdote that someone once asked Whitfield if he thought he would see John Wesley in heaven. And Whitfield said, "No, I don't think I will see him in heaven." And, you know, he pauses and he says, "He'll be so much closer to the throne of God than I am that I won't be able to lay my eyes on him," because he viewed him as a holy man. Certainly Whitfield and Wesley had their differences and their struggles and their relationship at times because of these issues. But at the end of the day, they found reconciliation and appreciation for one another. And I do think, even though there may be things that we have to, in order to protect what we believe are the biblical doctrines of the faith that represent God's work to his people in Christ, there still are ways that we can cooperate and even support and encourage one another. As you all live in Arminianville there, are there ways that you see that your congregation or your people are doing those kinds of things?
As a congregation, not so much, but I know, you know, a lot of people in our congregation homeschool. And so we are, you know, members or part of homeschooling communities, and they are influenced by Wesleyan or Arminian theology. I send my children to a Christian school. I serve on the board at that Christian school. And to be honest, there's some Arminian theology that's there. You have to take opportunity to instruct your children in those things and explain. But yeah, there's a lot of interaction and interplay between us and the Arminian community, as it were.
And that's important if we're going to have influence and help, because I want to see people understand more of the doctrines of grace. But if we separate ourselves from them, we're not going to be able to do that. I recall one point, there was a ministry in town that one of our members came and said, I just don't know if I should be involved in that because it's just, there's so many Arminians there. And I said, well, go reform it, or, you know, go share graciously what mm-hmm. the Lord has done, right. and try to have influence there. And I think we have to do that. It allows us opportunities, these kinds of what we might call co-belligerent ministries, such as homeschooling or mm-hmm. standing for pro-life in our communities, whatever it may be. It allows us the opportunity as well to introduce people to the doctrines of grace. We're a reading people often in the Reformed world. And so to have good literature, some of the ways that we can explain some of the influential theologians, you know, giving them an issue, whether it's just some simple like an issue of Table Talk to a book by someone like a Piper or Sproul or a Puritan. Mm-hmm. We can, in many ways, just encourage, influence people without saying, I'm trying to proselytize you and make a Calvinist out of you. It should be, I want you to understand better what the Bible teaches and who your God is and what he's done for you. And that should be really our driving ambition.
And I think the best teacher or the best way to do that is a life well lived. If we live our lives consistently with Reformed theology, with Calvinism, people will see that. And it does make a difference. Yes. It makes a huge difference in the way you you do your work, in the way you play, in the way you raise your children, in the way you vote, in the way you think about politics, the way you think about worship. And so a life well lived, I think, is the best example.
Yes.
And then it often causes people to ask questions. Well, why are you like this? Well, mm-hmm. I believe this. And since I believe that, it affects it in this way. And it gives a real organic opportunity to speak about, you know, the 5 points of Calvinism in a way that just being a 22-year-old new convert just you don't have, you know.
Right.
And we all struggled with that. You know, I remember being that 22-year-old who came into the doctrines of grace, and boy, I wanted to shove it down everybody's throat and
right.
turn people off more than anything. But
right, there's a lot of pride in the Reform camp, and
absolutely, yeah, you're right.
We're not going to win people that way. And it reminds me, you know, what have we been elected to? Ephesians 1 says we've been elected to live mm-hmm. a holy and blameless life. And so really agree with what you're saying, that it's going to be living consistently with the gospel, and particularly being humble and thankful and gracious toward people, that they're going to hopefully understand more the grace of God. Well, Scott, it's been fun just talking with you and not have Kyle. No, I'm just kidding. I love our, yes. our third party here, and we'll look forward to having him back on the next episode. But for now, that's all for 3GT. We're very thankful for you joining in and listening along with us. We invite you to go over to our website, 3GT.xyz, where you can find out more about us, listen to other episodes, and if you're so inclined, to help support us, as we are dependent upon our listeners. Thanks again for tuning in to 3GT.